stakeholders to come up with a way forward in terms of how we are going to address some of the systemic challenges that we have faced across all levels. That includes local government and the like. We want to make sure that 100% follow-up on remedial action methods by the 31st of March 2018, both reports and ADR are achieved when we end the financial year. 100% development or an implementation of a policy to deal with non-implementation of remedial actions. As you may be aware that our remedial actions are binding, but we have had challenges where some of the remedial actions have not been put into action or executed. The other goal is to achieve access to available public protector services. In this instance, we are looking at conducting 84 clinics per province by the 31st of March 2018. Clinics are engagement with methods that will be presented to us and also will be able to deal with those methods presented to us at various levels in the provinces. So in the first year, 2017-2018, we are targeting 84 clinics. 2018-2019, we're looking at 90 clinics per province. And the last year, or the third year, we're looking at conducting 100 clinics per province, which will be 2020. In terms of an effective and efficient people-driven organization, we'll have 10 awareness activities on institutional values, customer service charter to be in place by the 31st of March next year, 100% completion and approval of the institution's condition of service, including the remuneration framework. I may pause a while and say that we are looking at a new regime in terms of remuneration. We will obviously look at a human capital strategy. In that human capital strategy, we'll have a remuneration regime that is responsive to the conditions of the people that we, or the experts that we employ. 100% implementation of a video conferencing facility where we are able to talk to our clients and also have an integrated telephone management system in place. Moving along, we want to ensure that we sustain an unqualified audit opinion with less than 25% of emphasis of methods. Currently, we're sitting with the audit, the management report, close to about 150 pages. We want to reduce it to 10 pages. So that is a target, and that's the commitment I've given to the public protector. Conduct threat and risk analysis in all the offices by the 31st of December 2017 and implement the risk analysis, the recommendation by 31st of March 2018, again using an integrated security system. We'll also develop a plan to implement the recommendations of the feasibility study for insourcing of infrastructure. I've touched on this one, whereby I'm saying that there is a need for us to look at the current arrangement with the public, with the National Department of Public Works, and look at owning our own buildings and facilities. Promote and maintain good governance. We are going to have 10 dialogues with the organs of state on systemic challenges. And I've already alluded to the fact that we are looking at before June, a national summit to start dealing with some of the methods that we have collected in the roadshows and the engagement that we have had with various stakeholders. To play a leading role in strengthening fellow administrative oversight institutions, we will enter into a one bilateral agreement with an ombudsman by the end of the financial year. That concludes my part. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll allow Mr. Kaposa to present the financial part of the plan.
MPP. Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I present to you the budget for the Public Protector of South Africa for the 2017-2018 financial year and over the MTF. For the 2017-18 financial, we got a baseline budget of 301,831,000. And for the 2018-19 financial year, our budget allocation is 319,326,000. And for the 2019-20 financial year, we've got a budget allocation of 337,208,000. That represents an increase over the MTF of 6%, which is the inflation adjustment over the 3 years period. We've reallocated the resources, the money, firstly, in line with our strategic objectives, and we had a relook at the figures, and in the interest of not providing a different slide than what we had presented before, we'll present the revised slide at a later stage. For the first strategic objective, which is to deliver prompt services to all persons and institutions we serve, for the 2017-2018 financial year, we've allocated 179,737,000. And for the 2018-19 financial year, we've allocated 190,174,000. And for the 2020 financial year, we've allocated 200,825,000. And this represents 60% of the total budget allocation to this strategic objective, which is our core business. And for the second strategic objective, which is to achieve access to all available public protector services, this talks to our customer services and management objective of access. We've allocated an amount of 12,498,000 for the 2017-2018 financial year. And for the 2018-2019 financial year, we've allocated 13,404,000. And for the 2019-2020 financial year, we've allocated a total amount of 14,141,000. And this represents 5% of the total budget allocation to this strategic objective. And the first strategic objective and the second one represents our core business. And if combined, that will give us a total allocation of around 70% of the total budget. For the third strategic objective, which is an effective and efficient people-driven organization, that talks to our administration, the branches that serve in administration, which is finance, HR, facilities, communications, ICT, etc., etc. We've allocated a budget of 131,931,000 for the 2017-2018 financial year, and 120,298,000 for the 2018-2019 financial year. And for the 2019-2020 financial, we've allocated a total amount of 127,035,000. And this represents 38% of the total budget allocation over the MTF. For the fourth strategic objective, which is to promote and maintain good governance, we've allocated an amount of 6,497,000 for the 2017-2018 financial year, and we've allocated an amount of 6,919,000 for the 2018-2019 financial year, and for the 2019-2020 financial year, we've allocated a total amount of 7,368,000 and that represents 2% of the total budget for the good governance. And this, in this strategic objective, we're looking at hosting the Good Governance Week, the whole issue around clean audits and internal audits. That talks to internal governance at the public sector. For the fifth strategic objective, which is to play a leading role in strengthening federal administrative oversight institutions, we've allocated a total amount of 20,000 for the 2017-2018 financial year, and we've allocated 21,000 for the 2018-2019 financial year. And for the 2019-2020 financial year, we've allocated a grant amount of 23,000. And so this one talks to our partnership with the fellow administrative ombudsman offices. You will notice that these figures are not in the slide.
No, Chair. I was not trained as a financial person. So now, the figures that are before me are not the same as the one he is reading. So that may even take me more to a bush because I was trained as something else. So maybe if we can be favored.
Can we get an explanation?
As I indicated earlier, we had a relook at the figures, and the presentation which was submitted to Parliament was revised. So in the interest of not confusing the members, we've decided to provide this revised slide at a later stage after the presentation. So that's why the figure that I'm presenting are slightly different from.
But it should do that. My office has got to be informed so that I can inform the Honourable. Because you did not do that, you create a difficulty that is arising. Now, how do we get out of that situation?
Yes.
I was wondering if you can actually put that on the screen, because as you are speaking, you put something else on the screen, which is what we have here. And you don't put what you're talking about on the screen. You can't even look at the screen. That's what I'm saying.
I'm covered by Honorable Mpumla, and I was also suggesting that at least what you're presenting, put it on screen.
Wouldn't it be fair that you put what you submitted to us on the screen, and because you are the person that revised what is there, then put it and address the revisions, but from the original text.
Just to note, Chairperson, that the baseline doesn't change for the budget allocation over the MTF. It's the same amount. It's just a shifting of funds in between the different strategic objectives. But the baseline is the same. Yes. All right. So if I can go back to the first strategic objective. What we've indicated on the slide, to deliver prompt services to of persons and institutions, that talks to our core mandate. So that's money that is allocated to the good governance and integrity branch, the administrative justice and service delivery branch, and our stakeholder branch. So on the slide, you see that 8 million, and we've revised that, which is the slide that we'll present at a later stage, to 179 million for the 2017-18. And on the slide for 2018-19, we have 40,528,000. We've revised that to 190,174,000. And for the 2019-2020, on the slide, we have 42,798,000.
Is it possible to put your slide that you're looking at on? Because we've got this. So we are comparing.
No.
But we don't see what you are talking about.
Because I said it's good the original topic. So you are making a new suggestion. And I want to hear from the members. Do we
now
replace the original one with the one that is, as you are saying?
Yes, but we've got the phone. No, what I'm saying is that what is there on the screen is what we have.
Yes.
If he puts what he is now talking on the screen, and then we can make a comparison. Otherwise, now we are hearing what he said. He has made an adjustment.
No,
we don't see that.
That's fair enough. Are you in a position to put that what we are reading on the screen?
The revised.
Yes, we can, Chairperson. Yes, we can.
Going into a discussion of what has been presented while he's sorting himself out.
Agreed, Chairperson.
Yeah. Honorable members, we will allow him to get that sorted out. Advocate Mkwebane, is there any other presentation other than the budget?
Chairperson, the last part was the closing remarks from my side and some requests for.
Okay, let's leave that and go into the discussion.
Okay.
You know, there is a legitimate expectation by South Africans that state institutions should not be used for party political purposes. And in our oversight work, we still come across perceptions that some state institutions are so used. Now, given that observation, one would have expected that perhaps as a new public protector, you start by reaffirming the new approach that you have adopted and share with us the criteria that you will be using to prioritize the cases that reach your desk, and maybe share with us, since you took office, what are the high profile cases that reached you, and what progress has been made so far in addressing that. I say this because I don't want to be fighting with my members. I know that these issues are going to arise, and I don't want these issues to arise by chance. So I want to give you an opportunity to address that part to facilitate our discussion. Thank you. You want to address us? Are you in a position to do so?
Thank you, Chairperson, for the question. The question has been addressed or is also coming up when I'm doing the provincial roadshows, where I'm meeting stakeholders, introducing myself, sharing with them my vision for the next 7 years, and meeting the communities where those issues raised, to say how do we prioritize cases, and as well we should refrain from being used by maybe political parties or some people for their own agenda. I must say that as a starting point, I've assured yes, members of the public, or I'm still assuring them that as an office, which is an institution supporting or strengthening constitutional democracy, we'll make sure that we do our work, being subjected only to the constitution and the rule of law. And if there's any maladministration in state government or in state institutions, we will indeed investigate those. So the approach which we are having is to educate even the communities. As I've indicated, that one of the priorities is to educate the public, to also initiate the process of handling or resolving the matters in their own spaces, know their rights, and be able to engage the municipalities or government officials to resolve their complaints. The challenge, Chairperson, with the issue of some of the cases or some of the perception which is there, is that the Executive Members Ethics Act cases, where that legislation is very prescriptive, to say it doesn't give us a discretion. It says the public protector must investigate a complaint against any member of the executive within 30 days, in fact, and even compile a report within 30 days. Hence, you find that as soon as a member of the executive has lodged a complaint with the public protector in terms of that legislation, then we'll have to start the investigation. But then what I've discovered is that because of not having the capacity, within 30 days we'll write to the president or even the premier, if it's an MEC, to say, we have received this complaint, these are the facts, we won't be in a position to finalize the investigation within 30 days due to the challenges, but then we'll keep the president up to date. Then we continue investigating under the public protector legislation. So that is the perception which is created out there, to say possibly we prioritize cases which are lodged against especially the executive, the president, the ministers, the MECs, which have been lodged by members of parliament with the public protector. So the cases which we've received so far, I think members are aware, was the complaint from the DAE and EFF against Minister Mahlobo on the statements he made. We've also received the complaint against the Minister Gwindi. That one is twofold. He himself brought the complaint to the public protector to investigate, but then again we received the complaint from the honorable member of DA, and we also have complaints which we've received about, in fact, that was an own initiative investigation from our side, especially against the minister, Department of Social Development, the SASA debacle on the implementation of the Constitutional Court decision. But then we received a complaint from the DA again to investigate the relationship between the minister and CPS. So those will then be investigated collectively. So those are the cases where you'd find that they find prominence. And again, I must say that the vision of taking our offices to the grassroots is to make sure that people are their own liberators, as I've indicated, that we need to resolve these matters.
That's understandable, but I guess the committee will be entitled just to get the gist of those cases, what the case against Honorable Gwindi, Honorable Matomo, so the members know what we're talking about.
Okay. Let me take you through, because fortunately I do have, I was supposed to present this slide to Cabinet. The current cases which we have, maybe let me start with the, can I start with the old ones and then, or you want me only to address the new ones? Like all the executive EMEA cases. Okay, we've got the investigation which we've received from, it's a case at NMETA, where it is an investigation to allege use of medical helicopter by a KZN MEC. I think you remember the Bongseni Romo. This matter delayed to be finalized. The report was issued already in 2015. The Sports and Recreation Minister, the violation of the ethics code against the Minister Fikile Mbalula, it was the cost of travel. The report was issued 2015 as well. Against the Department of International Relations, it was the improper assistance and failure to declare benefit, which was received from Segunjalo. It was finalized in 2016. And there was a report against the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans, alleged misuse or wasteful expenditure of the South African Air Force. That matter was finalized in 2016 as well. Eastern Cape Department of Social Development and Special Programs investigation to alleged misappropriation of funds relating to the payment of assistance and travel allowances. It was also finalized in 2016. Allegations of breach of Article 2.3 of the Executive Ethics Act, where a person is using their position to abusing their position to receive an improper benefit. It was against the Department of Trade and Industry. It was finalized in 2016. And the Limpopo Department of Transport and Safety investigation to allegation of maladministration and the contravention of the EMEA legislation. This one has been finalized in February 2017.
Don't you think that the public is entitled to know? If you say matters are finalized, what does that mean? Finalized in what way?
Okay. Let me start with this one of 2017 under my jurisdiction. The Limpopo Department of Transport, Safety and Liaison investigation into allegations of maladministration and contravention of the Executive Members Ethics Act. The allegation was to the abuse of office and violation of EMEA by the MEC. The report was issued February 2017, and the report in that particular matter was addressing the issue of an MEC who intervened in the tender processes, appointed a forensic investigation company to investigate the tenders which were issued in the Limpopo Department of Transport, and we've discovered that the MEC violated the EMEA because she didn't have the powers to do that. That was the responsibility of the executive, in fact, of the accounting officer. So there were recommendations which were made to the Premier to take disciplinary action against the MEC, and then as well there were recommendations to the head of department to in fact to be disciplined as well, because the head of department didn't play her role in making sure that the PFMA prescripts are being followed. Then there is a complaint by MP Waters.
Honourable Chair, I don't know if the public protector has got the sense of how you'd want her to present on matters finalised. I don't get that sense emerging from her responses, and that gives me a lot of questions, question marks. I guess our expectation, yours, Chair, from her responses in relation to the question made to her, is to give an account or a report, at least if not to us but to the public, on matters resolved, and only on those matters which have already been made public and investigations on such matters have been resolved. And if she's in a position to do so, she must do that in a much better professional way. I guess she's not helping the process in the manner in which she's attempting to answer to your question.
With the matter, we should make the recommendation. Honorable Leswart.
Yes, and this is a summary, and we will engage. Maybe it might be helpful for the public protector also to give us a report in writing, which you might consider as well. But we will be engaging on these issues where we need further clarity on a particular issue, on a particular investigation. But I think in fairness to the public protector, she might want to provide us with a similar report that she's reading from, so that we've then got something in writing that we can further engage with, but not detracting from our engagement today, because I think that might help Mr. Mateus to understand when we mean finalized. We presume the report is finalized, but are there remedial actions? Have they been complied with? I think that's a major concern for the public protector. So she might be able to give us further detail. Otherwise, we might have to go through each one of these issues today and ask, when you mean finalized, is the report finalized? Is it public? Have the remedial actions been complied with? And we can do that. I'd welcome that as well, but it might take up too much time. There are obviously some very high-profile matters that I'm sure the public protector will get to, that we might engage with in greater detail. But without reserving our position to engage, you might give her guidance to give us a full report once the meeting is concluded as to all these inquiries. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you, Chair. I'm covered by what has been said.
I thought his hand was up long before everybody. But anyway, okay, all right. I was actually worried, Honorable Chair, by your request to the public protector. It would mean actually a litany of her work being detailed. This is what it affirms. And also, what may be regarded as high profile, I don't know who determines how high, how high is high, which is the one that is actually high profile. And I think that if you want details of day-to-day activities, case by case, of the public protector, then I'm not sure if this is what we want. At this stage, I think it's still early. It's just to say, to have a red pen and say, how far have you gone now on this one? What about Marshall's case? What about so-and-so's case? And so on. And I think that we need to engage first and foremost on what has been presented broadly by the public protector, and see how far they are going and in the direction. But I was just like Honorable Swart, not prepared to entertain that litany. Secondly, I would also, unlike the suggestion by Mr. Batrael or Mr. Swart, would not necessarily need even that writing at the moment.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. I think we're just going to be unfair to the public protector, Chair. You know, the strategic objective of this meeting is to present what was here to be presented. And if we begin to ask individual cases and she must present this case, that case, what happened, and so on, I think we may have to request her to do a separate submission and submit that to your office, then you look at those issues. But that she comes here wanted to go through case by case, we're also setting a very wrong precedent in the future, wherein we're just going to say, tell us about the cases. And part of our role is not to get individual cases. That is their independent role that they must do. and just brief us on an overview. So if we need that overview, we need to request it, then she will prepare it differently and bring it to your office. But for now, if we're going to get case by case and so on, I agree with Honorable Pumulwana. High level, who determines what is high level? Because we have not. If we have a specific case that we want to request an information about, we need to tell her and she gives the report to you. But if she's just going to give a list of high profile cases according to her, I think we are not fair to her.
Thank you, Chairperson. I support the sentiment that it might be too many cases to be presented. Moreover, she came here not ready to present this, as we are actually asking about all of these cases. It feels like the number of cases is just too many. If we need to know as to how these matters, especially the matters on the executive, have been finalized, who reported, what was reported, and how was it finalized, we can actually just request a report from the public protector. And also what we need to avoid as a committee is to think that when these matters are brought before us, then we should actually make inputs into what is being put before us, because we will be interfering in the mandate of the public protector as an oversight body. So they may bring information here, but we are not going to actually try and influence any form of outcome of the particular matter or the speed at which a matter should actually be handled. All that needs to be left to the public protector.
Oh, Chair, now I'm no longer covered, because it would seem what the Honourable Swart said has been taken and then expanded on to actually ultimately end up at a whole different position. I agree that it might not be good now to have a verbal report on each and every one of these investigations in terms of the Executive Members Act. However, I cannot agree with the sentiment that Parliament should not be briefed or reported to on these matters. I agree that a verbal report now might be, on the one hand, incomplete and lead rather to more questions than answers, but I would argue strongly that we must have a system in place where written reports in respect of all of those investigations must be put in place. And yes, ultimately where I do agree with some members is, Chair, the sense I already got here is that something the committee must engage the public protector on is in terms of capacity to deal with these executive members. As previously, she, for example, has said that because of the number of them, she's contemplating asking for funding on a case-by-case basis to deal with these matters and that type of thing. We know of a senior investigator position that has been created there. We can ask whether it's been filled, whether that's assisting. But I cannot agree with the sentiment that we will interfere with her mandate if we receive reports on how these matters are dealt with.
We may be overreacting or be defensive, because no one said the public protector should give a litany of cases. What was said was, we are public representatives. There are perceptions out there, and we offered her an opportunity to address these perceptions, because when the public protector is here, the public expects to be assured that the perceptions that they have are not correct. And I think the public protector correctly isolated about three or four matters affecting the national executive, not the provinces. But she went on to talk about what is happening in the provinces. And I don't think that was the idea, because there are structures in the provinces dealing with the matter. So I would say, public protector, those one or three cases that you mentioned and you were saying they are concluded, just tell us how were they concluded, and then we move on. Proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson.
I am worried, with due respect to you, Jeff. I'm worried about us micromanaging Public Protector at this stage. I'm worried that we react to what the public perception is, as you use that term. Which one did the public worried about? About Maslow? About us? Which public? So I'm worried we're getting into the waters that we cannot easily swim in future.
Can the public protector also indicate how many cases we're referring to? So that if it's too many, then they make a decision as to what needs to be done.
Honorable Advocate.
Thank you, Advocate. I must indicate that the current investigations for EMEA cases are around 11. And all of them, the investigation is ongoing. It's only one report which was issued, which I've indicated from Limpopo. And then the others, which I was saying they were closed, I think there are eight. The reports were issued already in 2015 and early 2016. So it will be up to the committee to indicate what cases they want clarity on, which we can also indicate how far is the status. But all of the cases are under investigation.
That's what the members are saying, that they would want reports on those that are finalized. So there's no crisis. I guess that's what the expectation is. Can we proceed and then enter into the discussion?
Maybe let me clarify again, Chairperson, that those which are finalized, we mean the report is issued and the report is on our website. It's publicly available, the report of those finalized cases.
Okay. The matter, because the question was, if you say finalized, what does that mean? Now, it means that the matter is concluded, is available to the public. Those who are interested in more details can go to the website, and that should close the matter, and then we can go into a discussion. Can I take a hand? Honorable Mpumulana?
Not continue. I thought it was while we were waiting for the CFO to finish up.
Are you ready? Or is ready? Proceed with the presentation of the
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Apologies for the confusion earlier, for not informing the House about the change slide in terms of the process. We should have informed the House.
They accepted. Okay. Just proceed to the business of the day.
All right, thank you. So this is the correct slide in terms of the figures which I presented earlier. Because I've already talked to the figures, I'm not going to talk to the figures again. They're on the slide in the interest of time again. So I'll move on to the second section of the budget, which is the budget classification in terms of classifications or allocations. And the first line item is compensation of employees. For the 2017-2018 financial year, we've allocated, please go back. Compensation of employees, we've allocated 236,217,000 for the 2017-18. And for the 2018-19 financial year, we've allocated 250,132,000. And for the 2019-2020, we've allocated 264,139,000,000. And for goods and services, in terms of classification, we've allocated 57,736,000 for the 2017-18 financial year. And for the 2018-19 financial year, we've allocated 60,853,000. And for the 2019-2020, we've allocated 64,261,000. In terms of depreciation, which is our capital expenditure, CAPEX, we've allocated 6,902,000 for the 2017-18, and for the 2018-19, we've allocated 7,303,000, and for the 2019-2020 financial year, we've allocated 7,702,000. Finance costs, which is interest element of our lease expenditure, we've allocated 950,000 for the 2017-2018 financial year, and for the 2018-2019 we've allocated 1,038,000, and for the 2019-2020 we've allocated 1,096,000, and that all falls within the baseline budget allocation for the MTF. The next slide shows an overview in terms of percentage allocations to the different programs. We've got three programs to which the budget is allocated. The first one is investigations. Investigations, we've allocated 57% of the total budget allocation for the 2017-2018 financial year. And for the stakeholder management, which also falls under core business, we've allocated 5%, and for administration, we've allocated 38% of the total budget allocation. And this slide talks to the 2017-2018 financial year. On this slide, we've further split the allocation in terms of economic classifications. So for compensation of employees, the total allocation is 78% of the total budget allocation for the 2017-2018, and for goods and services is 19% of the budget allocation. For depreciation, which is capital expenditure, is we've allocated 2%, and the interest portion is 1% of the total budget allocation. This slide talks about the budget allocation in terms of the program administration. And under administration, we've got the sub-programs, which in our case are the different business branches. And under administration, the total budget allocation, as I've indicated earlier, is 113,921,000. And that is split across the different branches, which is the CEO's office, which has roughly 6 million. The CEO support, which are the staff in the CEO's office, is 2.9 million. Communications, which is the telephones and ICT related costs, is 4.3 million. And executive support, which is the private office staff, is 5.9 million. And facilities and logistics, which looks after our buildings and motor vehicles, is 24.3 million. Finance, payroll, and SCM, under which audits included, and other costs, is like stationery, is 24.3 million. Human resource and development, is we've allocated 15.3 million. ICT, we've allocated 15.3 million. Internal audit is 841,000. Legal services and quality assurance, we've allocated 7.4 million. Media relations and corporate branding, we've allocated 1.6 million. Provincial investigations and integration, which is a unit that oversees the provinces, we've allocated 2.8 million. Research and knowledge management, we've allocated 2.5 million. And risk management, we've allocated 987,000. Then we move on to the next program, which is investigations. And under investigations, we've reallocated the budget to the different branches or business unit. And the first one is administrative justice and service delivery. We've allocated 20.4 million of the 173 million for that branch. And the Deputy Public Protector's Office, we've allocated 3.6 million. Good Governance Integrity Branch, we've allocated 13.4 million. Public Protector's Office, we've allocated 4.4 million. Public Protector Provincial Representation, and these are all the nine provinces, we've allocated 131.9 million. Stakeholder Management, which is complaints and stakeholder management, we've allocated 14.1 million. Now we move on to the challenges that we need to highlight to the House, which we are facing as an institution. The first one relates to insufficient funding. And the budget that we have presented does not cover most of our needs, and we are really stretching, as we've indicated in the even in the previous presentations in the past years. And our proposition in this case is to submit a proper breakdown in terms of our additional funding needs that we require to fulfill our strategic objectives. The second challenge relates to lost of morale, and this relates to issues relating to PMDS, which is Performance Management and Development, OSD, job evaluations and conditions of service. And our interim measure is to address the salary discrepancies that we have between the different groups of staff. The third challenge is the issue of capacity. As you may be aware that we require specialist skills in the areas of forensic, actuarial engineering, and quantitative surveying, which forces us to outsource. So in this particular case, we need to look at development of human capital development strategy for the institution to address those capacity challenges. And the fourth challenge is increased litigation as a result of the reviews coming from our report, and the budget there is also it's not sufficient. The fifth challenge relates to security. Currently we've got security challenges. Only two offices have warm bodies in terms of security, and most of our offices don't have security officers, including CCTV cameras and other things. So we need to institute security in our offices, and that also requires additional funding. The sixth challenge relates to poor turnaround times from support state agencies and institutions. And in this particular case, we propose to implement service level agreements with those institutions to address those particular challenges. This slide looks at the progress in terms of our audit findings. The first element is the audit findings relating to the 2015-16 financial year. We had 61 findings, and we've addressed all of them for the previous financial year. And the other audit findings relate to the interim audit, which is currently underway. The issues in progress, we've got 21 findings, and we've addressed 34 of them, and we are currently busy addressing the remaining audit challenges. The findings that we have that has multiple dependencies, and mostly is public works. We have one finding there, and there are two findings that still needs to be addressed that has multiple dependencies with other institutions. Findings resolved and completed from the interim in aggregate is 39, and that represents 64% of the total audit findings for the interim audit. Thank you.
Thank
you, Chairperson. The closing remarks from my side, we had to change computers because the other one didn't have the updated presentation. So the special request to the honourable members is for the committee to take note of the following: overall lack of capital injection to address the risk associated with the institution's mandate, including the strategic outcome-oriented goal, the Public Protector SA, for us to be fully operational with our structure being fully funded. As you know, that only 50% of our staff is funded. It's around 1 billion to stay afloat. I know it might be scary, but it's a reality. The committee to take note of the following, that the GOTA 2 and 3 performance, which I've already presented, and the progress we've made on the audit findings for 2015-16, and that the committee approved the strategic plan for the financial year 2017 to 2022, and the annual performance plan for the 2017-2018 financial year, and the budget allocation for the fiscal year 2017-2018. Yeah, Togos.
Can I take hands? Honorable Swart, Honorable Hon, Honorable Bongo, Honorable Taco, Honorable Mateus, Honorable Maila, Honorable Mula.
Chairperson, thank you, and thank you, Public Protector, and your team. And may I just congratulate your new appointments. The Deputy Public Protector isn't here. I presume there's an apology, but you can indicate that later. Firstly, just to thank you for your submission and your input, and thank you for the documentation, and in particular your strategic plan, the booklet that I see you prepared on the 24th of March, so you know, thank you for the printing it and updating of this document. Now, you indicate, and CFO, you indicate the major challenge is your under-resource, your budgeting, and this is an issue that has come up every year, and it is a matter that the committee does share your concerns, and we have in the past asked for additional funds, but it's becoming critical. And here in your strategic report, you say the allocation of 263 million is a drop in the ocean, and it is a matter of concern, Chair, and I'm sure committee members, we would like to help you, but maybe you can just unpack how you get to a billion rand request that we can, and how we can find immediate solutions to the situation you're faced with, because, Chair, as we've mentioned before, you are facing far more reviews of your reports and remedial actions. And, Chair, is it correct that according to your budget allocation program one administration, legal services and quality assurance, your total amount is 7.436 million? Maybe you can just confirm that is the amount that you have for litigation costs. And so that, Chair, is firstly just from our side, whatever comments we make. As we said yesterday with the NPA, we need to say it with the backdrop of the limited capacity and resources that we give the Public Protector. And so with that in mind, I would like to just ask you about the security that you've got. You indicated the lack of security, and we had the break-in at the Office of the Chief Justice. Are your computers secure? Because you're dealing with high-profile investigations, and is there any risk to that information being accessed? That is, of course, a very important point from my perspective. Secondly, the amendments to the Act and rules. to bring it in line, we know the Act was drafted in terms of the interim constitution. When do you see that process, and is there any way that we as a portfolio committee can assist with you expediting the bringing of the amendments that you are looking at? Then, Chair, with your permission, and it is alluded to in your strategic plan, some of the cases that you are dealing with at the moment. And on page 6, you do refer to the, and I'm referring to this both in as an oversight measure from Parliament's perspective, because in terms of, as you know, section 9.2, that no one can interfere with any investigation of the public protector. However, in terms of 9.2, nothing shall prohibit the discussion in Parliament of a matter being investigated or which has been investigated by the public protector. So it's in terms of that statutory provision that I'm going to ask you the questions relating to what you indicate on page 6 of your report, where you say, as far as the state of capture report is concerned, that is a review case, and you say that I have taken legal advice on the President's application. I must say that the legal arguments raised by the President and the remedial action taken by the former public protector are complex in nature and enter uncharted and novel constitutional territory. I am in the process of responding to the President's application. That's as of 24 March. Would that be a correct reflection of the state of that litigation surrounding the state of capture report number one? Does that mean that you, when you say responding to the President's application, is it an affidavit merely for the sake of the court, or are you, you gave a notice of opposition to the application. Is this an affidavit in opposition to the President's application? Purely for the purposes for us to understand in terms of that statute where that investigation is, and not to interfere in any way, but to understand that the complexities of that matter and of course the legal implications, the cost implications of that matter. Now, one last aspect relating to that report is that there is nothing to prevent you now, in view of the fact of there is this review, and in view of the fact that there are many people concerned about what is going on in our state SOEs, the NPA investigating criminal cases, and the report was referred to the NPA. Public Protector, are you following up with the NPA as to where there appears to have been crimes committed? And in particular, if you look at page 350, where there is allegations of the Bank of Baroda in contravention of Section 24P of NEMA relating to the rehabilitation of funds, there are very serious allegations here surrounding Gupta-related companies, which can be investigated right now by the NPA. And of course, there are various prima facie where the public protector, previous public protector, would say it appears, such as the involvement of the present Deputy Minister of Finances being offered a position. That would be directly in contravention of Section 34 of the Prevention of Corruption Act. Is there anything to prevent that being investigated from a criminal prosecution perspective as per the finding of the public protector, the former public protector, on page 354, paragraph 8.11? The public protector brings to the notice of the NPA and the DPCI, that's the Hawks, those matters identified in this report where it appears, again, it's the word appears, prima facie evidence, crimes have been committed. That's dealing with that aspect, Chairperson. I've got a number of other questions, but I think I'll reserve it for a second round, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair.
In respect of the financial situation, I would, I think the committee must just follow up with the public protector in respect of the stance she expressed in October last year regarding donor funding, when she said that going forward it would be a big no-no in the office. But later it transpired that the donor funding, specifically from the German and American governments, was the fruit really of a government-to-government agreement, and that therefore it was not sourced by the previous public protector herself. So it would be good if the committee can just be informed as to what is now the situation in respect of donor funding generally, and then specifically also in respect of those the funds coming from the German and American governments. In respect of the financial situation, Chair, I just have one additional question, and that is that previously when we had the Auditor General on an annual basis coming to Parliament, it has been reported for 2 or 3 years that technically the Office of the Public Protector can be deemed to be insolvent. And now last year, during the BRRR hearings, we were informed that certain austerity measures were to be put in place in order to prevent that situation from reoccurring. So it would be good to have some feedback regarding whether that will indeed happen come tomorrow, the end of the financial year. Then, Chair, in respect of the strategic challenges mentioned, one of them was mentioned to be the slow turnaround time of other departments and state entities, and specifically SSA was mentioned. Now, October last year, it was mentioned that there was this issue that security clearance has not been finalized, and that the forms to was sent in respect of the minimum information security standards to SSA. So it would be good to hear, given the fact that they are again, SSA is again branded as being slow in responding, whether that has indeed been finalised. And then, Chair, in respect of the issue of clean audits, it's interesting to note that the CFO said 100% of the audit findings has been addressed. But then a more careful look must lead to the question whether the public protector sees addressed to be incremental or process in phases. Because of a worry is that although there is now an indicator regarding the setting up of an internal audit unit in the APP, a closer look reveals that the target is only to advertise and then a point towards the end of 2018-19 and have the unit functioning by the 1st of April 2019. And that must obviously lead to the question, or the comment rather, that in terms of clean audits, that will put the whole program then theoretically on a very slow train towards 2018-19, and then the question must be asked whether that cannot be expedited in order to assist the Operation Clean Audit. Then, Chair, just in returning to the issue of the Executive Members Ethics Act, I just want to repeat my question then regarding whether the public protector deemed capacity within her office to be sufficient in dealing with these complaints, since it is, as she indicated, not something within her discretion, whatever is complaint she refers must be investigated, and then the question regarding that senior investigator position created on the 1st of November last year, whether that has been filled, and then also the question regarding funding for these investigations, whether they're still being treated within the normal budget. Also, specifically given the fact that there's no real way in really foreseeing how many complaints you will be receiving, and whether the Treasury has been approached with additional fundings on a case-by-case basis. Thank you. I'll leave it for now at that.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Or is Bongo? Or?
thank you very much, Chair. Public Protector, thank you for the presentation. I think it's a well-prepared presentation. And I think that when we advised the President to appoint you, part of what we said was that we wanted the person to hit the ground running. I need to say this, that Chair, we did not mislead the President. I think you are hitting the ground running. And thank you for that contribution. The report, in 6 months' time in being in the office, I think it does respond to the vision that you also raised in the interview on what exactly you want to do for the people of this country. And I appreciate that you also say that you want them to be their own liberators. Now, one thing I want you to comment on and be able to focus on is the issue around the, because all I see, we're busy more with the public sector related issues. And less is said about the private sector. There are a lot of things that are happening in the private sector. And how do we, as you also speak about us having to amend this legislation, because it was also drafted on the basis of the interim constitution, how do you make sure that it does not only look at the public sector alone, but it does concentrate also on the private sector? I also appreciate that out of the remedial action cases, at least out of 150, 70 were able to be dealt with swiftly. I think that is very positive. Now, there is one issue which arose also on one of your roadshows when we were in MLO, the issue around the land. I think it is my considered view that there must be special focus, particularly at the public protector level, on trying to alleviate the plight of our people in the farms. I know it came very sharp in ML, but it will come very sharp as you continue with the roadshows, the issue of the land, because I think it's a matter that we need to assist the public on a very serious note. And CEO, I hear you say you got unqualified, which is quite good, but we're looking at a situation where institutions like the public protector must just have a clean audit, because it is themselves that must be able to investigate others who are getting qualified and so on and so forth. So we should be able to lead by example at that point. Now, our last budget review, our BRRR report, spoke very at length about the issue of funding. And we indeed said that we need to look at the issue of increasing the budget. But at the center of everything, it is my constant view that if you are investigating a particular department, you must find the way, how do you, because as Honorable Swart is saying, the billion is quite a big amount. How do we make sure that those that bring the matters, if they are state institutions, we are able to also charge them so that you don't eat from the budget that is not there on the investigations that you or yourself are doing, so that this money must increase in a progressive way without saying you've got a billion rand, you still have the same budget, but if you are investigating a state institution, they themselves must be charged for such a service by yourselves. And one issue is about the vetting of the staff. I think I want you to comment more about the vetting of those people who are doing investigations in the offices, the senior investigators and so on, if you're using, if you, because in the past they used to use consultants, the extent to which you vet this consultant. I was at my, you said part of your vision is to make sure that this thing go to the ground. So it is in twofold. If it goes to the ground, I was at Siyabuswa, where my constituency is. And the Office of the Public Protector, it was since closed. So the complaint they always raise with me is that, when is this office going to be open? But if your vision really is that it must be driven from where the public is, I think we may need to make sure that we attend to those issues. But secondly, around those issues, I see the budget as they read it. It says Deputy Public Protector, 3.6 million. Public Protector, 4 something million. Then it says Provincial, 131. I think now it does not talk to the vision, because in my view is that those millions must be going down, must be going more down than going to where, to the main office. Like that 3.6, it can go to, if it can add up to the 131,000, so that our response must not be from the top, but our response must be from downwards. I mean, the slide by the CFO, it is saying the public, the allocation of the public the deputy, 3.6. And my considered view is that, you see that 4 and 3.6, 4.4 and 3.6. And then provincial, 131,000.
Million.
Is it million?
Yeah.
Okay. No, it's fine. So, I think that another matter that may also alleviate the issue of funding, the issue of having to purchase your own buildings, because you spend a lot of money in terms of paying the renters. But if you are able to purchase your own building, then you will know that there is a long-term saving as you are dealing with those matters. So just investigate those issues and check the spin-offs of having to deal with this issue of budget. Otherwise, I can confirm to you that any institution that comes before Parliament or before this committee, they always want an increase of money. So you yourself must be able to assist Parliament on how to generate this money and how to save where you can save and budget in a more proper way. Chairperson, I think I can stop there for now for other colleagues. I will come on the second round.
Chairperson, let me start by thanking the public protector for the presentation and the CEO and CFO. Chairperson, the issue of access as raised in the last interaction with public protector is very, very critical. And even during, fortunately, I was part of the panel which was interviewing the applicant. Fortunately, Advocate Mkhwebane managed to get the position. During her interview, she emphasized on issue of accessibility of public protector's office. Now I can see that it is really bearing fruit, because she made mention of use of offices of traditional councils and use of indigenous languages, issue of multilingualism, which is very, very important. for we want even the poorest of the poor to be able to access the offices and services of the public protector, especially in relation to land related issues and other basic services. Now, what I would like to know is that I've seen elsewhere in the document, PP, where you made mention of having intention to conduct 84 clinics per province. Now, when I times 84 by 9, it gives me 756 clinics. So, taking into consideration budgetary constraints, will that be practical? And again, Honorable Horn made mention of issue of internal audit unit. You got unqualified audit opinion with the findings a lot. And as of now, even Honorable Majaki, for the past 2-3 years, he has been lamenting about the issue of creation of internal audit units in PP's office. But you are targeting clean audit for 2017-18. How do you think you'll be able to achieve this without this very important unit? Because that will only be, in terms of the documents before us here, will only be possible. The position will be filled by 1st April 2019. And this really, PP, this is a very important unit. And it may create a problem in terms of achieving a clean audit come 2017-2018. So please take that very seriously. And again, let me congratulate the PP office for filling the creating a position of senior investigator responsible for executive management of Executive Members Ethics Act. This is a step in the right direction. But your predecessor had a concern in terms of funding of such. And she had an intention, a proposal of requesting funds from Treasury on case-by-case basis. Do you think you still have an intention of continuing such a proposal? Another issue, Chairperson, is the low staff morale. Even during our last interaction last year, that was mentioned. When I do oversight, Lukwani, Joburg, it's true, the staff morale is very low. Please address their issues, especially OSD and job evaluation. Because since 2009, nothing has been happening. And we expect poor staff to perform. And really, they are performing. Because the office is in very good books of the media and public because of the same investigators, the same junior staff members. So please, let the office do something to address this issue because it's really very, very critical, PP. Okay, second round. Thank you, Chairperson. Okay, Olukwalu offices. Olukwalu offices. Oh. Okay. Oh, thank you. Did you manage a public protector to go to Olukwalu offices, especially during summer, and see for yourself the conditions under which poor staff as working under, especially reception. Just be there for 30 minutes. I tell you, you'll become 10. No ablution facilities, but we expect them to perform. No phone, telephone. When they are needed, when they are in consultation with clients and call of nature arises, they have to go up, or they are emergency. Really, that is not good. So please do something. Thank you, Chair.
See, many people at the back there, I don't know whether they are students or just members of the public, and we appreciate that interest, and I think you also have the right to talk to members of parliament if you are students, you want to know things, or to talk to the delegation.
Advocate Busisiwe Kweba. Look, what I'm about to ask, I think, is partly covered in your foreword, in your strategic plan 2017-2022, and you are making your own reflection of your first 100 days in office. And there's an attempt to cover some key highlights of your first 100 days. I'm not so certain whether we can safely say that of the first 100 days in office, you have reaffirmed the South African public trust and confidence in your office as a constitutional watchdog, and whether that trust can be ascertained, that your office as a trusted Chapter 9 institution to be the watchdog and the guardian of the South African public is reaffirmed. And this doubt in my mind and in the minds of many is as a result of your very first public statements in relation to your vision and how you'll be approaching your mandate for the next seven years. I'm not so sure if over the 100 days, you have strengthened and enhanced the public trust in the working of your the Public Protector's Office, or that trust has been ruined. These are questions that many of us ask. This is precisely because of you classifying some cases of, in inverted commas, what you refer to as high profile cases, in inverted commas, that you would be dealing and would be giving appropriate attention to those, but in the main you would be looking at grassroots, common, average concerns and complaints which would be brought to your office by ordinary people like myself. So if we are to think about an approach that says high profile cases, of course, yes, they are important, but they are not that much important. You tend to erode that confidence of our people in the Public Protector Office unintentionally because of the level of alleged misappropriation, maladministration, fraud and corruption, money laundering, illicit financial outflows. These are high-profile matters. And the Public Protector assumes office and says, but these are not that much important. I guess that you'll be in the same position as those who say somehow that was a very unfortunate statement. So my question begs the answer. Have your office over the last 100 days strengthened and enhanced public trust in the public protector office? Unlike others, we stand here to and we demonstrate that consistently, despite reservations we have about your appointment and all of that, though at the beginning we expressed our confidence and we further said that we would be giving you a benefit of the doubt. Would one again can I please be protected, Honorable Chair?
I want to object.
And this that I'm saying has got nothing to do with
it is very, very important and is part of our custom that we do not show or attack the office or the person of who is holding our position personally. If you say, I have no confidence in you, now that's something very drastic. And I think that it is not, I think that the Honorable Member should refrain from doing that. And we cannot stand here hearing that a public protector was told by a party that, now we gave you a benefit of doubt. Now we have no confidence in you. But that is not all. We need to discuss the work of the public protector. We don't need to go to personal attacks.
Now, if we are going to scrutinize every sentence and choice of terms, we're not going to make progress. I think let the member finish what he's saying, and the public protector will deal with that.
Of Parliament, which applied.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. To protect me, though you protect me after facts, when my time has been and I'm being partly distracted. It's not my fault that people have to be trained and to come here prepared. And if they don't, should not be blamed on others. And it must be on record that I don't take my briefing from any member of the ANC. And I shall not be guided by them about what I'm about to say here and in the future. Now, I reserve the right to say what I want to say here, uninterruptedly. I'm saying, unlike others, I sit here to affirm our consistent position that the Office of the Public Protector, for it to fulfill its constitutional mandate, ought to be supported. And we're happy to see the reflection that the current allocation is far below what they would be able to do in fulfilling its constitutional mandate. And therefore, if the 1 billion proposition that is made before this committee, which probably would later be approved by Parliament, is what the public ought to pay, so be it. And in doing so, further reaffirm our confidence in the Office of the Public Protector. And in this case, I'm not dealing about the individual, the incumbent. I deal with the institution. For it to fulfill its constitutional mandate, it ought to be supported in order to strengthen its capacity to deal with the issues that I've highlighted, which it derives from the Public Protectors Act as well as the Constitution. However, Honorable Chair, there are concerning issues here which the presentation has highlighted, one of which is relates to human resource and the level of staff morale. And it should be disconcerting that, and entirely disappointing, that of the first 100 days, the office has been ravaged by resignations and these levels of low morale amongst or within the staff. I think the Office of the Public Protector should be the least of institutions where we've got high, we've got low staff morale. We've got cases where day in and day out there are resignations and all of that. And most of these resignations are resolved at CCMAs and all of that. Because the Public Protector ought to be seen in the manner in which it handles internal conflicts constructively, which would not lead into any swaying of some negative perception in the public. So that is very disconcerting. We also want to hear what is it, the strategic plan that they've got to deal with that. I see that vacancies have been advertised and there will soon be.
Honorable Horn yesterday, that when we speak, be mindful of the fact that there are many others who still have to speak. And I also guaranteed members the second bite.
Let me move to my second point, Chair. Would I would really sit at here would like to know what plan is in place to deal with leakages in the Office of the Public Protector, especially in relation to the APSA Bancorp bailout report. And how do they intend to deal with those? Because leakages such as these are not helpful but damage the reputation of the office and compromises the status of investigations. It's important that that matter is clarified until such time the matter is clarified. And I have to say this because the office has not issued a single statement about its intention to deal with such leakages, and if there are any culprits, such culprits should be brought to book, because we cannot afford to have such leakages. Thank you.
Yes, I'm happy that you clarified that you never said you have no confidence in the Office of the Public Protector. You never said that. Honorable Maila?
What I'm saying, Chair, is that we have expressed that would give the office the benefit of the doubt.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks, Chair, and thanks, Public Protector and the team for the presentation. In your introduction on the strategic vision, there are some two or three aspects that I would like to latch on. My colleagues have already latched on others. On number three, you are indicating that you have identified key stakeholders and will be having memorandum of understanding with them, which is a good thing. Now, you know, in my other life, I used to be a provincial coordinator of community development workers. And I would like you to have a way of identifying that sector as a potential stakeholder. Because you have here government employees who are not based in offices, but who are based in communities, who are in touch with the plight of our people and your relationship with that sector. Can actually bear fruit. On number six, you are indicating that you would like citizens to be empowered to enforce their rights even before they approach the public protector. which to me is also very good. And I believe that when you do your road shows, this will be one aspect which will be taken care of. on number seven, you're indicating that you'll be encouraging organs of state to establish effective complaints resolution units. You are giving some examples, the health ombudsman, tax, military, etc., which says to me you are ready to share the workload with like-minded kind of institutions. And this will actually assist us in doing away with overlaps with various institutions and other chapter and institutions. Now, I would like you to go to town on the integrated security system. I just want to get a feel of what that is, how it works, who are involved. Honorable Mutapo has already hit on the issue of accessibility. But I wanted to share, to check if you are in a capacity to share offices with other Chapter 9 institutions, or not necessarily offices, but all other resources also, given the fact that we have this issue of scarce resources as a problem. Now, you know, I where we are now, after the 100 days, I feel much better, because I can see that the dust has settled a bit. You know, within the first 100 days, there were altercations between the current public protector and the former public protector. There was a bit of a storm. But what I'm going to say, I don't want you to comment on, lest you be quoted out of context. I want to make a comment on the issue of the vehicle which was damaged by the former public protector's son. There were indications that as you dealt with the matter, you were vengeful, you were dealing with it out of anger, but at the end of it all, the former public protector indicated that she was ready to pay for the damages. She was doing it as a peace offering. She was doing it because of a moral compass and ethical consideration, which are things which, in my opinion, had always been there. And, you know, at the end, this is my submission and my observation. My observation is, in this case, in this particular case, there was pure error of judgment. And I don't want you to comment on that. That is my observation. Now, on the issue of APSA and other matters pertaining to apartheid era looting and corruption, especially in the private sector, I would like to commend you for having released that report, which of course could have been released some times back, but because there were high-profile cases, maybe that's why it was not, maybe it's not high-profile enough. However, what I want to get to is, it is my observation that the issue of APSA might just be a tip of the iceberg. appears to have been widespread corruption, especially some few years before the attainment of democracy in this country. I don't know whether who can be able to do that, but I would like to see an investigation done on how property changed hands, especially immovable property, whether it be land, whether it be buildings. How property changed hands, sometimes from the state to individuals. Shortly before democracy. Because we are sitting in a situation where some people are actually owning cities. I'm from Limpopo, in the city of Polokwane. There is one family which literally owns almost 3/4 of Polokwane. And you don't know how that comes about. So I would like to see such investigations being made. Otherwise, let me pause now because second bite is guaranteed. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, you're not. You're not. I'm waiting. I know you. I just want firstly to congratulate the team for the work done and the report given. And secondly, I want to request the team to see, I mean, I'm happy that they've said what they would like us to do for them. But I think there are certain things. Now, when you come into an office and with the certain objectives that you want to achieve particular things, you probably see there are stumbling blocks. Whether these stumbling blocks are caused by legislation or any other instrument. For example, when you said that, I don't know which section of the Act or this Act that says you need to prioritize any complaint against the executive. And which you must do within a particular 30 days. I don't know, I didn't hear that provision, but there was something that you talked about. Now, I picked on that one, and I said, well, they allow the public protector to have a discretion of what to investigate and where and how and when. At the same time, we say, As far as this concerned, you must do that. Now, I'm looking at a case where anybody, for the next 7 years, we simply pile complaints about executive. It means by the end of your term, you would have only done the complaints about executive. And that can also be used by political parties that just want to punch some holes on their opposition by just saying, you see, so-and-so did this, and you are bound to investigate quickly. I thought that when you threw that to us, you are saying we need to change that. We are lawmakers, we need to change whatever is in not assisting you in your work. I would therefore respectfully request you to note all those laws, all sections of the law that you feel that they will distract you from generally doing the work to service all the majority of South Africa. Secondly, you complained naturally, like all departments, about the lack of funds. But I think that your office is very important. It has always been very important. And there's always been a cry for we didn't give you enough money to do the work. But this particular time, I want to suggest maybe we can, it's up to us, but I was just saying it up, that can we have a PP tax concentrating mainly on the rich and people that they pay. We have some kind of a tax like for that. I think that will probably, I'm not saying it's yours, I'm just throwing it.
But you are the lawmaker, don't ask her to make the law.
That's right. No, I'm just commenting about that. The other thing you, if I remember correctly, there was a talk about security clearance on the people within the PEP. I'm not sure if you have done that and how far that has been done. The other one, I just want to talk about that Ngwazi, regarding your funds, when you talked about, I just wanted to get to know when you talked about the office of the CEO. Are you talking about the money spent specifically? Does it include also the personnel in the CEO? Does it include, what do you, can you just clarify when you say in this office, what are you talking about? We are not talking about assets. Are you talking about human resource? In which case, does it not include the other human resource budget that we have put for other members of staff? Are you saying specifically for that? Or are you talking about the traveling expenses? Are you talking including the expense of fixing of the cars and so on? What are you actually talking about? If so, why do you decide to separate them? Why do you decide to separate? For example, if you're talking about the vehicles allocated to CEO and vehicles allocated to public protector and vehicles allocated to that, why don't you just say expenses related to vehicles? Why do you say this expense is related to that? Because I think I thought it's one office. So Mwazi, I just wanted to find that from you. I will come back.
Honorable Majaka.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also take the opportunity of welcoming the report. Very informative. And to say that within these few months, quite clear and evident that there is work that is being done. And I must actually warn you that as politicians, there will be an attempt to use your office for political gain, but utilize your mandate without fear or prejudice, and not be swayed by the spit of noise directed to your office. You want me to repeat, Chairperson? Okay. I'm saying that we need to warn the Office of the Public Protector and the Public Protector herself that as politicians, there will be an attempt to use their office for political gain. Utilize your mandate without fear, favor, or prejudice, and not be swayed by the spit of noise directed to your office. Also remember that you can actually investigate on your own accord to help speed up transformation of South Africa and alleviate the triple challenges of unemployment, poverty, and inequalities that continue to exist in South Africa, which means we
to a large extent, maybe, need to give you space also in terms of implementing your mandate for you to actually manage to transform the country and utilize your own strategies to actually do so without being flooded too much with these reports that eat up almost all the time and the monies. We normally hear the slogans such as freedom and democratic freedom is nothing without financial liberation, which is the general feeling that South Africans are starting to have. They know that they are free, they know they understand their rights, but there's no financial freedom in South Africa, and we're just thinking that offices like you should actually be part of processes that are supposed to actually bring about that kind of change. We also welcome the suggestion by your office or intention to amend the misalignment of the Public Protector Act of 1994 with the Constitution. Maybe sometimes some of these problems that we're experiencing is because of the misalignment. We will be hearing from you in relation to this. You've indicated that you've done team building, which I think is good because, you know, previously we have had so many resignations in this office, especially of top management. And we would know top management because resignations of top management are actually reported to Parliament. We're not exactly sure of what's happening on the ground. But it's good you've done team building so that we can build morale of personnel in this office. It's very important if we are to achieve the goals and manage to fulfill the mandate accordingly. Your IT system, you indicated that you are actually working towards improvement of connectivity and IT system, but at the same time you indicated that you want to own your IT system, and your budget is actually indicating that you're spending something like 15 million on IT system. You'll correct me if I'm wrong, it's a lot of money. And when you look at some programs, they actually only have 2 million. And I'm actually saying, are we an office that's open to IT systems, or it's the office is about the programs that needs to be implemented? So it feels like something is not right, and I'm happy you have already identified this problem, and you're actually working towards working on it so that we can be in the position to alleviate it. Also, what we have indicated previously in terms of rents and leases was to say that you should look at a possibility of getting a building of your own. And we're not saying this to you only. All the government departments and state institutions that come and report to us, we say the same thing. Because there's a lot of money of government that actually goes into leases and rents that we can actually avoid, in the sense that we can take the same amount of money and purchase a property, which will actually help in a long run to reduce the kind of budgets that we present and use the money for development of the people of South Africa. You have actually also indicated that you want to strengthen your role in relation to your engagement and development of ombudsman offices. I think it's good that you have decided to actually go along those lines, because there have been complaints around some of the ombudsman offices, and the type of complaints that we receive would be, for example, that if an ombudsman is paid by the industry and you have to go complain about the industry to the ombudsman, then people feel that there isn't really any fairness. And I think your intervention in this area will actually assist and will actually continue to promote access to justice for the people of South Africa. Your outreach clinics are commendable. The numbers, I can see you even increasing them. For now, you've reported in the third quarter, you did 225, and your plan
is actually being over ambitious. It says 84 per province, which is actually a lot. But at the same time, I'm asking myself, is this about also what you suggested as mobile clinics? Because you just mentioned talking about them just as clinics. And I don't know whether, because whether it's about also the concept of mobile clinics, but what we have suggested previously with the clinics, we said these clinics might actually become cost-effective for the country if you do them jointly with other Chapter 9 institutions. If you bring on board the South African Human Rights Commission, if you bring on board the Commission on Gender Equality, which is something that you can discuss at the level of the Forum for Chapter 9 institutions, so that the exercise then becomes cost-effective to actually help us to make some of the savings in some of these areas. And then also, in terms of the Executive Members Ethics Act, it indicates that you need to investigate cases that are reported about executives within 30 days. But at the same time, if this becomes problematic, my introductory statement was that we may end up also utilizing your office or misusing your office. And if we misuse you to the extent that you find that you're flooded with the cases, and I'm not saying when there is something that is wrong, it should not be reported. It must be reported. But let's not find that there is a game of just reporting these cases and you find yourself running like chickens without eggs. And if this is something that comes from an act of parliament and is creating a problem, maybe it needs to actually also be looked at and reviewed. Thank you, Chairperson.
Public protector, I think it is important that we remind ourselves that your brief is to support and strengthen government. And therefore, that we really should look at, in the light of your power to review, look at the question whether or not it is affordable and sustainable that government departments will have to go to court to redress your decisions or get them confirmed. Because it means that the departments must come to us and ask for more money to defend themselves against your remedial action. And you must also come to us to ask for more money to take them to court. Now, shouldn't we, because I can see there's consensus, that we must amend the legislation, that we immediately initiate that process, so that in the process we consider a approach which says there must be exhaustion of certain mechanisms. For instance, you have ADR processes, and other internal remedies like negotiation, so that going to court must be the last measure, because otherwise we can bankrupt the state by all of us were rushing to court and we need a budget. And where do we get the money for everybody to go to court? So I want to support you and the committee when they say let's review the amend the legislation, then we can look as to how we deal with this question of reviews and maybe create other remedies. But also, I want to agree with Honorable Mutapo that if we have all these clinics, what is the purpose of the clinics? Is it to educate people about human rights? Or educate people about the work of the Office of the Public Protector? And if that is the case, why can't we, as the Honorable Majake suggests,
there are other Chapter 9 institutions whose brief is to educate. There is a foundation for human rights. Why don't we take the educational matters and give them to the Chapter 9 institutions that are mandated to provide the human rights education? I hear the suggestion that you must have your own buildings, but there are so many unutilized state buildings. If you enter Pretoria, you will see from Fountain Gardens almost the whole block of buildings that are not utilized. Criminals live in those buildings. There's drug dealing in those buildings. Why don't we first say, before we build new buildings, let's do an audit of the existing buildings and see if we cannot renovate those buildings and utilize them. Another point which was made by Honorable Bongo and Honorable Remaila here, the question of land has become a very hot issue, because it can't be acceptable that one person owns the whole of Bulawayo. Bulawayo is a city, and if it's owned by one person, it means the most urgent matter for investigation is that matter of Bulawayo. And then you have this morning, I received a call from Greater Letaba Municipality, Mujaji Skloof, that there is a businessman who already owns three quarters of the town. He is now buying the land, which is under claim, claimed in 1998. Now, which means that there's no law, because the law says you can't buy a land which is under claim. But there are people who are buying land that is under claim. Those are the most, in my view, most urgent things that should be investigated. Because if we focus on people in government who stole this and stole that, but these major national things of the land questions are not attended to, one would ask, what is the office in Bulawayo doing if they operate in a town that is owned by one person? What are they doing if in Greater Letaba the municipality cannot provide housing, they cannot provide any other service because one person owns the town? So I want to agree with the honorable members who say the question of land must be a priority. We need to find out who owns what and how did they acquire that. So I would lastly say that there's another problem, and I was in a one meeting where a member of the Bulawayo Public Protector's Office attended, where concerns were raised about corruption within the community property associations. And I have never heard about investigations to deal with that kind of corruption. And last year, there were announcements where one traditional community is moved from one area, trust land, into another, but they get compensated, whereas already they will be compensated by another piece of land. But claims against white farmers are not pursued. And the reason why, are the white farmers perhaps paying people not to pursue their claims? So I also want to suggest that the land claims in the Mopane and Vembe region in Limpopo must be investigated if we are serious about supporting and strengthening government. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, honorable members, for the engagement. Mr. Swart, Honorable Swart, indeed, I should have passed the apology of the Deputy Public Protector. We have the IOMA meeting in Lusaka, so I couldn't attend. I had to cancel my attendance so because of this engagement. So DPP is representing me there. I serve on that executive committee as the chairperson of the African Ombudsman Research Council institution, which is based in Durban, KwaZulu-Natal University. And on the issue of the unpacking of the 1 billion, I'll allow the CEO to respond on that. The issue of judicial review, the litigation cost for judicial review, the unpacking of that, we'll have to allow the CFO to comment on that, because surely, yes, it's our budget is around 5+ million, but then I'll allow the CFO to comment on that. And then the security at the office, yes, it will address Honorable Maila and Honorable Swart. The integrated security system will be addressing all the security-related issues, the issue of our CCTVs, our scanners, and after the holding of some of our officials last year when there was a protest. So those are the issues we will be engaging in to make sure that, that those are safe. But then it will also engage, involve the issue of security of the computers, because currently our investigators, I think it will also address Honorable Matthias, the issue of the security of our ICT or our computers. We are busy working with the CETA on how we can get advanced software on the issues of encryption, especially our information, because we need to have secured systems. On the amendment of the Act and the rules, whether the committee can assist, it will be appreciated. I think Honorable Bongo and Honorable Chairperson, you've raised the issue of amendment, and Honorable Mbumlwane. What I can say, we've submitted the draft to the Department of Justice while we still have the issue of consultation. But I must indicate that the issue of paying for the services by government departments, indeed, it's accommodated there, where we want to use the same model of Auditor General and then SIU, because we are saying for us to be investigating, it needs to be addressed. But then also, possibly the comments about the PPSA tax will be raised there when we the legislation is deliberated, especially those who are taking us forward. On the issue of state of capture report, the page 6, yes, we are busy with the preparation of the affidavit. You must know, Honorable Swart, that we've consulted with all the councils, especially on the issue of confidentiality. Remember, there is also the issue of us having to avail the records in terms of Rule 53. Therefore, we couldn't avail certain information without guaranteeing the issue of confidentiality. So the process, it was ongoing. Fortunately, we've got all the guarantee for the issue of confidentiality now. And then we will be submitting the affidavit soon. The affidavit will also detail what our challenges are. Because remember, if the court considers the reviewing the or setting aside that remedial, the finding, then we will have to find a way of going ahead with the investigation with the limited capacity which we are having. So I must say that we are at an advanced stage of finalizing the affidavit or the response to the court. It might have some elements of a counter application on certain elements. And the issue of the hawks and them, I think the key issue is that following up on the findings are related to the very same remedial action of establishing a commission of inquiry. So some of the elements in the findings will have to make sure that this issue is clarified. But then I don't think there's anything stopping the NPA from going ahead or the Hawks from going ahead in their investigations. I think possibly they can comment whether they've started the investigation in that particular matter. Honorable Horn, the issue of funding, yes, it's still a no-no. And I must indicate that That matter has been dealt with. We know that it's a government-to-government process. I've engaged with the National Treasury and Department of Justice to say they assisted the public protector in that particular aspect. And I must indicate that the issue of the donor funds as well, it's more of technical assistance. It doesn't resolve our issue of capacity, because you cannot use the donor fund budget to fund our structure. Currently, we are talking about our structure being 50% capacitated. So we will not be proceeding with that. We will only proceed with those which already have, they have started doing, because it was on training, it was on outreach model. So that one was provided by GIZ, and I think those were the project we will finalize. But then we won't be proceeding with the rest of the budget. The AG, that the public protector is technically insolvent, I think the CFO will address that. Turnaround time by the SSA, slow finalization of vetting. I don't know, it was mentioned today, or we are complaining about them. I think that I'll need clarity on that one. I didn't get it properly. Whether are we investigating that so that I can answer properly?
Sorry, Chair, may I? Now, the question really turned around the report of the, or the information given by the public protector in October, that not all officials in at the public protector has security clearance, but that they've struggled to get that from SSA.
Okay, thank you. Oh, that one, I think it links up to what Honorable Bongo raised, whether officials. I must say that the turnaround time has improved drastically. We have the new appointees currently. They've already been vetted. We said we would not be appointing any person without being vetted. And then the old officials, all the forms are updated. SSA is busy doing that. And then especially we said they must prioritize the senior management or the top management. So the turnaround time has improved drastically. So we're waiting for the finalization of those audits of the security clearance. The clean audit, I think the CEO will respond to that, and CFO. The EMEA, yes, the senior investigator has been appointed. He's already started on the, I'll just check the date, but the senior investigator is appointed, and then they were busy interviewing for the second official, the senior investigator. So the posts have been filled and they were funded. So we've managed to reprioritize, and then we funded those posts. We will be having two officials dealing with those cases. And then the issue of Honorable Bongo. The private sector, the challenge here is our jurisdiction, because the public protector has jurisdiction over only state government institutions. The public protector, the private sector, we investigate if the matter involves the private sector. I mean, like your APSA matter, it was because we investigated due to the fact that government had a report where money was spent and it was never implemented. Hence, we will have to go back and check what happened. Then we can deal with the issue. I think it will go further to say, especially the issue of the land claims or whatever has been taken, the properties. Again, we also have a challenge where some of the properties, those incidences happened in 1994. And the public protector's jurisdiction started only in 1995 when the office was established. So you find that if there's a complaint linking to that particular process, yes, we can reveal the information. There's one matter we are investigating about the issue of the race courses. I won't give much details, but then it has an element of where the originality of the transfer of those race courses to certain individuals. So we'll have to get all the details from the deeds office to check the paper trail. So that's where we can be able to go back.
But we have some limitations when it comes to that. Indeed, land issues and farm evictions, it's very gory details when you go down there and you hear stories of how people are treated. But then on those ones, there is a roadshow which was done apparently in 2013, which I got information this morning in Piet Retief. So we'll have to follow it up and check how can we package that in such a way that we check all the farm evictions, all the land-related issues, so that we can come up with some recommendations on as far as that matter is concerned. But then again, Chairperson, I must say that is for the lawmakers to deal with the issue, because sometimes it also has some implications on what the Constitution provides as far as that particular matter is concerned. But then we are willing to make sure that all the land claims which are pending, because we have jurisdiction over the department, so we'll have to make sure that each and every province of the Public Protector will have to get details of the work of the relevant department to check how far are they in fast-tracking those particular applications. Because it's a question of saying, even if the applications are not lodged, and as Honorable Majake is saying, the issue of own initiative, and which is a burning issue, as an institution, will have to prioritize it and deal with. The office in Siyabuswa, their strategy, I think, to cover all the questions about access is that I've already met with the Minister of Justice, and he was also very excited about the issue of utilization of the magistrates' courts as some of the offices, because it will promote the issue of social justice, especially because in offices they also have your legal aid and other institutions which are there. So as a public office of the Public Protector, we will be using the magistrates' courts, the traditional councils, to, in fact, I met also with the Minister of COGTA to say we need to have an MOU. It has been drafted. In fact, soon we'll have to meet and go through it and see whether we can sign it. Use the municipal offices, the traditional councils. Those will be our clinics where our outreach officials will go on certain days. That's why the issue of meeting the target of 756, it will be possible, because if our officials, currently some of them are using open spaces, they don't use offices. So the main aim of the clinics is both to educate, but to as well receive complaints. And when they go back to those clinics, they will, after the complaint has been done, go back and give feedback to the applicants. So it's not purely education, but it's both ways. But not, again, neglecting the proposal to say, when we meet as forums supporting institutional democracy, we need to make sure that we come up with our consolidated plan where we can use one forum where we can all be there to do the issue of education or to utilize that vehicle to educate. The vetting of staff, I've indicated, it's on progress. The challenge which has not been done is vetting of consultants, especially from the supply chain management, which the CEO is still new. His plate is full, which I said we need to check all the contracts we're having. We need to make sure that going forward, every contract we are issuing, we need to vet those consultants or those suppliers. I think the issue of utilizing those government spaces, it will be reducing on the finances. We won't need additional funding to have our own buildings where we can't establish offices or new offices. And this will also help us to reach as many people as we can, especially justice buildings, traditional councils, and that. I must indicate that we... with your advice, as members of the honourable members, I think you've mentioned several times the issue of buying buildings, and we also promised there was a feasibility study according to our strat plan, where we needed to check the bulk procurement of, especially printing, but vehicles as well and issues of buildings. So that study is ready, and indeed there's a lot of cost saving measures we will be having. In fact, we have already written to the Minister of Public Works, because we don't get any cooperation, to say we will be going ahead as a public protector to then procure our own. And I think we are noting, CFO and CEO, what the chairperson has proposed. Check the audit, whichever building or government building which is existing, so that we don't go and procure or and get a building and start afresh, whereas there's a building which we can utilize, a state building we can utilize and renovate and occupy. So that is in progress after your I think you've been advising on the matter that has been taken up. And then on the issue of use of, vernacular, and it was a comment, and I've addressed the issue, Honorable Mutapo, I've addressed the issue of access. I must say access for us is not a luxury, it's a must, because Section 181, I think 3 of the Constitution says the public protector must be accessible. I think hence we also have it in our strat plan. So that one is an issue not only of buildings, but again, speaking to people in their own languages, and as well the utilization of community radio stations, which it was not done, but now we'll be using a lot of those to make sure that we can access as many people as we can, especially to reach our mandate of the grassroots. The internal audit, I'll allow the CEO and CFO to comment on that. I think it was an issue of using the current internal audit firm, but in fact we've outsourced that. I think I'll allow them to comment on that, but it's a critical issue indeed for us to achieve a clean audit. Low staff morale. I must indicate that we've started dealing with the matter. This was in the annual report, if you remember, and again, there's still pockets of those which are continuing. We've started dealing with the issue of OSD for senior managers, because it was an anomaly to find a senior investigator any more than their manager or senior manager. So that one has been handled, I must say, with effect from March, it has been resolved. Therefore, there will be phase two, addressing senior investigators and investigators, and the other phase of addressing the issue of job evaluations. But the CEO has indicated that there is a human capital strategy. I think he can unpack it on what we are going to do and what are the quick wins we need to deal with on that issue. Indeed, our staff is our strategic asset, so we'll have to make sure that we deal with it. Honorable Mutapo, yes, I visited Bulukwane, and indeed it was a, I don't know how come we procured that building and we built it the way we built it. But for now, because the contract is expiring 2022, the CFO, I hope the provincial executive manager has informed the CFO to look into the contract, to check the escape clause and to check what can we do with that particular contract. But for now, we've installed the blinds and the tinted windows to avoid the issue of the sun. And but now the ablution is, it's one thing. I agree. And I think CFO and CEO, can we check in that building and see what other options we can have? I think we will have to report on that one, what we are doing. Honorable Matthias, thank you for your comments. And I think with the stakeholder, with the provincial visits, that's what we have been reaffirming the public, that as an institution we are there to support and strengthen constitutional democracy, an independent constitutional institution which needs to operate within the law and the constitution. But then I think on the issue of, I think to address the issue of accessibility again, I think I must indicate that in that process of strengthening constitutional democracy, because going around meeting the speakers, the executives, the traditional leaders, the churches, it's they're also using the speakers forum, especially on the public participation. We requested that let them invite our office in all those so that we can also utilize that as part of our clinics. So engaging with the public, we're doing that, and we will address the issue of that, the pockets of those people who still have challenges in trusting our office, and we hope that they will develop trust as time goes on. And the issue of the dealing with the grassroots matters, again, Honorable Mathias, the issue of Section 181.3 to say the power protector must be accessible to communities. It was the key issue to say this is a constitutional mandate. If we don't do that, then it means we are violating our mandate as provided for in terms of the constitution. High-profile cases, definitely we are dealing with them, and we do have a section. Well, the high profile, I can say, is those which are regarded as involving billions and millions of monies which are involved, where we have the good governance section dealing with all those cases which are taking up to 2 to 3 years to deal with. It's so unfortunate that some of them are cases which can be best dealt with in court, and they are brought to the power protector sometimes where you have to investigate in terms of EMEA. So it's an issue of making sure that we are balancing that. I think it's an issue of how that was reported. Okay, in fact, Section 182.4, which deals with the issue of access, it's a must for us to be accessible. They are correcting me. The issue of the resignation, staff morale, I've addressed it. It was there when before I arrived, and we're trying to address time by time, and hence the CEO has mentioned the issue of human capital strategy. We've started paying the OSD for the senior managers and executive managers, and then it will be a process, a phased-in approach. And then the resignations, I must indicate the people who resigned, the one which went to the CSVMA, the person resigned before I started on the 14th of October because the head appointment was invalid in terms of the process, and the post was not funded. It's so unfortunate that that was an administrative decision which was taken. And the CCMA ordered that because it's an administrative decision taken, even if it was the issue that I would say I never took that decision, but it's as an institution, we were supposed to pay the balance of that particular contract. And then the others, it was contracts were ending, so that's what, only two resignations, I think, for better opportunities, and I think it means we've got the best investigators, and they are getting other opportunities outside. I think I've addressed the issue of the leaks, and it's very concerning. We did issue a statement, Honorable Mathias, on the matter, and we've opened a case. Remember, I indicated we've opened a case up, to investigate the responsible people, so that investigation is still ongoing in, to get into the bottom of this leak. And Honorable Maila, thank you for the comments you've made. I think with this provincial community workers or development workers, I think it's very critical for us to engage with them. I wonder whether it doesn't fall within the COCTA. Yes, we'll be having an MOU with COCTA. I think we'll have to make sure, CEO, that we also keep a key focus on it. So, as I said, we'll have to sign an MOU soon, I think first quarter of the next financial year. The integrated system are dealt with, the issue of sharing complaints resolution matters. I think the issue of sharing our investigations, there are investigations we're conducting jointly sometimes with the Human Rights Commission. I think we need to do more, especially to also avoid the overlaps and to make sure that we we save on the resources. Because I think all the issues of systemic investigation, like your RTP housing, your health issues, your water-related, land-related issues, we need to make sure that we handle those between the two of us, since they are concentrating more on the issue of access to those rights, but then on our side, it will be more on the issue of maladministration if there's undue delay in the provision of those services. So that one we're trying to do. Yes, I won't respond to the issue raised. And then the APSA, the apartheid looting, I think, again, that is a solution for the lawmakers to check what can be done, especially on the issue of the Constitution, because the other root cause might be the provisions of the Constitution on how we can change it, especially the issue of land, because that is an opportunity which can be utilized on that one. But if there are cases which we are investigating, as I indicated, this one of the race course, where we will have an opportunity to dig deeper and we can reflect some of the things and make some recommendations as far as that is concerned. Honorable Mpumlwana, the legislation is there, EMEA, Executive Management Ethics Act. Indeed, it says 30 days a report must be there. I think it's for the lawmakers again to look into that legislation. It's within your jurisdiction. We've made proposal as well to amend the legislation, especially the Executive Members Ethics Code, because we've picked up that sometimes a member is appointed or a minister is appointed, then is accommodated in a very expensive place, and the building where they are supposed to be accommodated is not ready. So those are the issues we propose. They need to be amended in the Executive Members Ethics Code to align it to the legislation. The CFO will clarify the budget in the CEO, PP, and everything. Honorable Majake, the issue of politicians abusing our office, that is one of our threats in the strike plan. If you check our strike plan, we've mentioned it because there's that element, and thank you for raising it, and indeed, we'll have to exercise our mandate without fear or favor and just focus on the rule of law. And investigating on accord, we appreciate that. With the roadshows, we've also picked up the challenges of the way municipalities operate with the traditional councils and the chiefs. There's a lot of issues which are brewing around there where the chiefs will allocate a site, not consult with the municipality, request the municipality to provide services, or the municipality, the councillors conduct work in the chief's area, and the chiefs, so there's that kind of issue, and some queen in Chabanchu as well raised some issues where lodged a complaint, so, and there's also issues of the commissions which are delaying to take decisions on who is the chief, who's the... So we requested that we get the details of all those we'll investigate. But then we were proposing to have a summit, especially meeting with the COCTA, traditional councils, and just find a solution on how can this matter, because it's a brewing issue which is causing this destabilization in the communities. And again, it impacts on service delivery, because sometimes people... then take the law into their own hands on issues which can be resolved. I think we are exercising our role then as mediators and conciliators. And I think you've seen we're also encouraging people to say, don't take the law into their own hands. Invite the public protector to come and mediate between you and the relevant government department. The FISD one, appreciated. What we are busy doing as the institutions supporting constitutional democracy, we are busy finalizing our terms of references, especially where they receive a complaint, human rights, we receive the same. So we are standardizing to say we will be sharing information on cases so that we make sure that we don't investigate a matter whereas another institution is also investigating a matter. And EMEA, I agree. I think that one is for the lawmakers to decide on how it can be amended. Chairperson, I think I've addressed some of your issues. Indeed, that's what I'm preaching, going around the provinces to say we are here to strengthen constitutional democracy. And our strengthening of constitutional democracy is to make sure that our people enjoy the democracy which they have voted for. So we appreciate it that you will support our amendment of the legislation. And I agree with you that, I mean, we are taken to court by the very same government which is using the same fiscus, possibly then including the element of arbitration, which will also be very cost-saving indeed. And we're taking your advice on using the unutilized buildings and your advice on our outreach senior manager link up with other Chapter 9 institutions on how they can help us to educate the public on our mandate. I think the issue of land and the Mahoba Mujaji's proof and the, especially if it involves the department, we'll appreciate to get the details so that we can go ahead and investigate and possibly rope in South African Human Rights Commission if it's an element of something which falls within their mandate and see how we can improve our people's lives. Corruption within Community Property Agency, I hope Mr. Ndowe is noting that. We'll have to follow up with the Polokwane office. The traditional, okay, whether if the person who's buying, who has moved from one area to another, will have to check. In fact, it will involve the investigation of the Department of Rural Development, and because it involves the same one. Why cases where if it involves white people, it's slow, but if it involves one traditional person being moved, it's quicker. So we'll check on those. Thank you. Let me hand over to the CEO.
Thank you, Chairperson and members of the committee. I'll explain the 1 billion that we are requesting. In fact, 1 billion is a conservative amount. We are already sitting with a shortfall on the current staff, which is 50%, of about 626 million. Now, that is just on the current staff establishment. And the 626 million is over the 3-year period. So there is a shortfall that was also presented in the previous engagement with the committee. Now, if we add an additional 50% for the complete structure, then is two times the 626 million, which put us at 1.2 billion. And that is only looking at the institution as a whole. We are excluding the appointment of subject matter experts like your actuarial scientists, your engineers, where they are required where we do a very complex investigation. So what I will do, Chairperson, is perhaps we provide the committee with a detailed background as to how we have arrived at the one billion. But as I said, it's a very conservative amount. Okay. That's part one. Part two, just to add on what PP was indicating in terms of the MOUs. MOUs that are already just to finalize in terms of the PP to sign off on them, is an MOU with the City of Joburg, Ombudsman. So that one, I can report to the committee that we have already completed that one. The second MOU, which is most probably going to be concluded either at the end of this week or the beginning of the first quarter, is the MOU with SALGA. So We have met with SALGA and we have ironed out, you know, some of the areas that we want to work with. So that MOU is already a matter that will be concluded in the first quarter. And then there are some MOUs that are work in progress. Also those we hope to conclude them by the end of the first quarter. The first one relates to the Kohta. I think PP has covered me on that one. And then you have MOUs with the legislatures, provincial legislatures. One, KZN, we are looking at one MOU there. Northwest, we also have met with the legislature, presented the program, the 2023 vision of the PP. So that is also something that is a work in progress. And other provinces that have been visited before I joined, I think it's Limpopo, Mpumalanga, MOUs are being under, you know, formulation. And we also visited the Free State Legislature, and again, that's an MOU that is underway. So that is on the MOUs that I wanted to just add some more information for your to the committee members. And then the issue about staff morale, I think PP has covered the bulk of it. But the issue of staff morale is also around the public protector having adopted a framework that was designed primarily for the public sector. So the OSD, which is a framework that was designed by the Department of Public Service and Administration, has actually created some of the challenges that we have come across. However, we have started addressing some of the quick wins. I think PP has indicated some of the salary disparities that we have paid out. There's still a backlog because you still have some people who are in the same category but have not yet been catered for. But this is again as a result of not having sufficient money in the system to be able to cater for them. So we have quick wins in terms of dealing with those particular cases so that we are able to retain those expertise. And then the human capital strategy that I have indicated that I will introduce into the organization will basically be trying to, on a phase-by-phase basis, overhaul the OSD system. And this human capital strategy will look at a different salary regime, whereby you reward people in terms of the portfolio that they occupy, and also be able to use the regime as a basis of rewarding people on the basis of their performance. In other words, the performance management system that will be tied to the human capital strategy will be based on a 360 degrees balanced scorecard. So bonuses will not be an entitlement, but it will be based on performance. So the performance management system, which will be embedded in the human capital strategy, will be used going forward. But as PP has said, it will be done in a phased approach. There was an issue around the building. Yes, in some, we'll take the point that we must do an audit, but the current situation has actually pushed us in the direction where we have already indicated to the minister that, look, we want to, you know, purchase our own building. I think I will not reiterate what PP has said, that there is a recommendation of a study that has been done. Obviously, we'll take that recommendation. We'll take also the audit of the buildings and see which ones we can utilize so that we can save costs. So that we are taking it, as an input from the committee. Mobile clinics, I think there was a suggestion that whether we should, there was an issue around the 84 clinics, whether is it a stretch target. I think if we come to an agreement with the courts, that number is achievable. But again, We have included it as a stress target, and it's also to push the officials to be able to say, if we really want to have people to have access to the services of the public protector, maybe we should stretch ourselves a bit. However, if it comes to a point mid-year where we are not able to meet that particular target, obviously we'll come in report to say that we are based on the evidence that is on the ground, maybe there's a need for us to re-look at that particular target. And then the committee can give the nod or not a nod. The issue around clearance of the companies, vetting the companies and the officials, that one is underway. Obviously, we have looked at all the companies that are in our system in terms of the services that they are providing us and ensuring that they have been vetted because they are working in an environment where documentations have to be secured. I think the issue of the computers and also whether they are protected, the IT system that is currently being rolled out, including the hardware, all the laptops that we have here will be encrypted. If I lose this laptop, for example, the data will not get lost. So that is the way forward that we are trying to adopt. It's a matter of time, maybe within a year, I think we'll be up and running to have a fully secured system. Shared servers. I think we take the point that we need to share servers. The only challenge that we have said that our mandate should not be cluttered with other institutions, but because we don't want to get ourselves confused with other entities because of the nature of our business. But we do take the point that where there is a shared service required, we will look at it. Chairperson, I think I have covered some of the aspects. I think the others relating to finance, I'll ask the CFO to address.
No, there's still a tomorrow. CFO.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll deal with the issue of cases under review. Currently, we have 21 cases that are under review by the public protector against a budget of 5 million, which is ring fenced from the National Treasury. And this budget, by the way, does not increase over time. And you might be aware that each case, some of these cases might take from maybe 3 months up to 3 years to conclude, and it can cost probably up to 1 million each case. So there is a real risk in terms of under budgeting under these cases, and this is one of the areas which is a risk area for us for purposes of funding and for purposes of making sure that we are covered under these cases. So that's the information briefly under reviews. And we are required by the AG to disclose a figure of contingent liabilities in our financial statements relating to cases under review. So all these 21 cases are reported to the AG and disclosed in our financial statements. On the issue of technical insolvency, this issue is also related to underfunding. As you may be aware that over the years, the AG has raised the issue that we don't have enough money to pay our liabilities. So when you compare the current assets against the current liabilities, technically, we run short of the money that we have. So this is one of the risk areas that we are watching very closely, which needs to be guarded to make sure that indeed we've got sufficient liquidity or money to pay our current liabilities. So it's a risk area that we need to guard at all times. In terms of the clean audit, the outlook, we had a briefing with the AG in terms of the interim audit that is currently underway. There are certain areas that the AG has highlighted that we need to correct. One of them is the whole issue of liquidity, which I've already highlighted. The second area is the issue of performance in terms of whether we get a deficit or a surplus in our performance statement. which we are also watching very closely, and the whole issue around meeting our targets, APP targets, and certain figures in our financial statements relating to commitments, accounts payables, and so on and so forth. So these are areas that we are giving very close attention to make sure that they are corrected when we submit our financials at the 1st May, which is the legislated date in terms of submission of the financials to the AG. But very briefly on internal audit, currently we are outsourcing our internal audit. We don't have an in-house internal audit. Our budget for outsourced internal audit currently is around 800,000 per annum. Now, this is also another area that talks to the whole issue of funding, because 800,000 per annum, if we were to employ a senior manager in internal audit, that is just the salary of one person. And we need, for us to have internal, in-house internal audit, we need not just one person. We need at least three or four people to capacitate that unit. And the 800,000 will not be sufficient. But safe to say, the internal audit that is outsourced currently, they are doing a very good job, which the in-house audit would have done. But that's one area that we are looking at as management. When we get the additional funding, to make sure that we capacitate this particular unit. Very briefly on the budget allocation, we are required to present the budget in terms of the program and sub-program. Now, you have noticed that when we put the amount, we don't break it down in terms of whether it's compensation of employees or goods and services, but the amount that we are showing is everything. So the salaries included there, there is the goods and services included, and everything else. So when we say CEO's office, the salaries are included, and the goods and services and everything else is included there. So very briefly, that's the chairperson.
Public protector, I'm happy that you made this observation at the relationship between traditional leaders and municipalities, because one gets the sense that we don't take that level of government seriously, and that's where the majority of the people are, and there can be development if the municipalities and the councillors, the councillors and the traditional leaders are at war, and it is not clear what the demarcations of the jurisdictions are. And I actually don't think that is a matter that needs investigation. It needs actually arbitration, as you correctly said. Our department and parliament, we have an interest in the matter because at the moment we are dealing with traditional courts bill. When we adopt that bill, it's not going to be possible to implement it if those challenges are not addressed. So I think we should welcome your decision to enter into an MOU with the COPTER, but maybe we should, agriculture is also an interested party, that maybe we should look at a way of really having a joint workshop just to look at that situation and see how we can help that level, a sphere of government, to move forward. And there's also a situation where when change was taking place, some officials in the municipalities, I'm sorry to say, white officials, formed companies outside and leased the land from municipalities for 99 years, which means that the current municipalities don't have access to the land. Now, the people demand services, demand housing. Where are the municipalities going to get the land to provide those services? So that's another area that must be looked into. For instance, you were talking about race courses. There are also golf courses.
the African youth don't have access to golf facilities because these things have been given to some private hands for 99 years. So I think you have your fingers on the pulse. But another question is, what would be the status of public parliamentary constituency offices? Because there's a lot of information sitting there about all these challenges and irregularities. Would those reports, if submitted to the office, qualify to cause an investigation into the challenges there? Lastly, there's this question of the 21 cases, which are certainly going to be very expensive, and that, I think, justify what you are suggesting, that we need an amendment. Because the department is not moving, maybe that legislation must be referred to us, because we have oversight over the department. We can ensure that attention is immediately given to the amendment of the Public Protectors Act, so that we really address the things that affect the people, because we can't have all the Chapter 9 institutions saying they will go and educate people about their rights. What is of immediate need now is remedial action on the ground, rather than just telling people you have the right to be free, you have the right to water, but there is a river there. The river is not accessible to the people. So I think we are on the right track, and we are grateful that within the 100 days, you were able to do such a marvelous work that will take us and our people forward. And we must thank you for, and wish you well, and hope that you keep up the good work. Honorable members, I think we have come to the end of this session, because 2 o'clock we must be here. I usually keep my promises, but this time I won't keep my promises to let you have a second bite, because you have beaten so much that you are exhausted all the time. Thank you very much for your constructive contribution. And lunch will be in Mark's building. Thank you very much. And bon voyage.